think I'm good. All right, let me just get this in the right spot. Hi, I'm Robin, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really excited to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope with all of you. And John, thank you for asking me to do this. It's a real honor for me. And welcome to our newcomers, Vivian. Wow, you're doing the deal. It's been great. And we've got two more newcomers, and I'm blanking out on your names, but I know you're one of them, okay? Oh, and Peggy, oh my gosh, of course. I keep forgetting that you're a newcomer because I've known you so long. And I know that some of us, yeah, that's your story. Congratulations, Juan. Oxford won. I don't know where you are right now, but yeah. And Matt, congratulations as well. It's always good to hear how other people are doing it. And welcome to all the other newcomers that may not have introduced themselves. Let's see, where do I begin? I'll begin with my sobriety date. That's October 7th, 2012. And I was one of those people. I started drinking when I was 14. And I had my last drink when I was 49. So that was 35 years of drinking and 35 years of knowing I probably shouldn't drink the way I drank. And that last night, when the cops were knocking on my door, and I thought it was my ex coming to apologize for having, because I broke in on where he was. I knew where the keys were to the house because I'd moved out a couple months ago. We decided that, like, this marriage wasn't working after 20 years. And that afternoon, we talked about, like, having, you know, the divorce proceedings, and we were pretty, you know, we were getting along pretty well. But I got drunk. And so Dr. Jekyll turned into Mr. Hyde. And that part of me that, you know, that I don't know what happened, but I decided it was okay for me to go walk over to that house that I no longer lived in and bang on the door, and he would come, and I knew where the keys were, so I let myself in, and the intent was I was checking to see if he had a woman over at the house. Well, he did, you know, that's part of why we broke up, because, but what I didn't realize is that I was breaking and entering, and that when she was calling 911, and I did this to her face, and I said, boy, you really are ugly. I didn't realize. That's assault. And so I went running back to my apartment. I heard the knock. I thought it was Tony coming to apologize. Yeah, no. I mean, that's part of the other thing, too, is that, you know, now being in this program, I understand that I was self-will run riot. You know, it was all about me. You know, now I understand that that marriage didn't break up just because of what he was doing. It was this right here that had a big part of that marriage breaking up. So the cops came in, and I said to them, I don't know, I'm not like this. I'm a kindergarten teacher. And I mean, I really am. I teach elementary science. I mean, I teach kids in junior kindergarten, first, second, and third grade. I teach little kids. But when you put alcohol in me, I'm not that, you know, I'm not the kindergarten teacher anymore. I'm a drunk. So, and the cops had said, we talked about pressing charges. You were headed for jail. And I also said, yeah, I kind of figured. That's why I was dressed to go to jail that night. And it's like, you know, I don't know. But anyway, the next day I woke up and I thought, this is it. I really have to stop drinking. And I was like that all week. And I was telling lots of people. And we all thought it was a really funny story until one friend of mine said, you need to get to a meeting. And I heard her. I knew exactly what she meant. And she told me later she'd been telling me that for years. And I cannot tell you, I don't remember her ever saying that. And this is what I say to newcomers, is that, or people that have relapse, is that it works, it comes when it comes. I mean, it's just like, I was desperate, and I knew I had this, like, I knew I couldn't do it by myself anymore. And so when Mina said, get to a meeting, I heard her, and when I went to that meeting, and I said, I'm Robin, and I'm an alcoholic, I could breathe. And, you know, it was like that first time I had a drink, I took that breath, that relief. But this time the relief was that I didn't have to lie anymore, and I didn't have to put that front on, and I didn't have to try and do it by myself anymore. And because of that, I was so desperate. One, I went to that meeting. Two, I started taking suggestions. And at that first meeting, I heard, you know, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So I went to a meeting that night, and every meeting I went to from then on, you know, I got more tips, like, here's the book, here's the meeting schedule. And then I started making friends, and people said, let's go to this meeting and such. And but when they told me to ask somebody to sponsor me, when they told me to get a sponsor, and I found out that a sponsor is someone that was going to help you, and I thought, what? Because I'd been so used to cleaning up my own messes all my life that I couldn't believe that this is a program where we help one another. That just floored me. And since then, yeah, I get it. This is a WE program. You know, they say, like, oh, look at the steps. The first word is WE. But that was a big help to somebody who had been trying to be the tough chick all her life and trying to clean it up all myself. And that's another thing, Matt, I when you were talking about you're only as sick as your secrets, when I was new and I heard that, there were so many things that I was ashamed of that I had done because I wanted to drink all my life, that I thought I should be tough and carry those and not share them. And I didn't have any resentments about it. That's just how the way it is. You drink like I drink, you're going to get in trouble. And, you know, it's just like, but when I heard that, I was ready to tell those things. And I was ready to share. And now I get it. I get it. I didn't realize that, you know, trying to be the tough chick and carry those secrets, those are called resentments. And it's also about, because those secrets were, I was carrying, I didn't have any feelings about things, and I didn't have feelings about much of anything, you know, like, again, I had that wall around me where I didn't let anything in, and I didn't have any feelings, so I didn't express feelings. I just didn't, I get it now. Things like, yeah, I didn't get then, I get now. And that was like, I didn't like people crying at movies. I didn't like people crying. I didn't cry much myself. The thing I did do is I laughed a lot, but that was like a manic laugh. And now I know. Yeah, that's another thing. It wasn't until I was sober and I was diagnosed with bipolar, because I had been drinking, self-medicating, and but when I'd been sober, like, well over a year, and I remember, like, just lying in bed, like, I feeling I could die today and not, it wouldn't bother me, and feeling like that depressed, and I'd never felt that before, but again, I was sober now, and so I got to feel those feelings, like, that real depression, and the days where I hated myself so much, and I would say to myself, wait a minute, Jenny wouldn't say that about me. She was my sponsor. And I started listening to all the people that wouldn't say that about me. And that's part of like the joy of being in the fellowship, is feeling that love that we say, we'll love you until you learn to love yourself. It's that unconditional love. Which is another thing, when I first got sober and I felt like I had not lost. I still had my job. I still had a relationship with my 14-year-old kid. I had a good life. And I still didn't think that the marriage was breaking up because of anything I'd done. And I started to feel really at home here because people were really making me feel welcome. But then when I started hearing everyone's stories, I thought, oh no, they're gonna kick me out. You know, it's like, I didn't do that. But I really loved y'all because you were making me feel welcome. And then what happened is, in the years since then, all these stories keep coming up and I said, oh yeah, I did that. And I did that, and so I stayed. So the step one, I'll go back to the steps. I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that I couldn't do it by myself, that my life was unmanageable. I didn't realize how unmanageable it was until I started cleaning up. So the unmanageability that I'm powerless, I forgot. The sheriff came a couple days later at work. The principal comes down to my class. I'm teaching junior kindergartners. And he says, tells me there's a sheriff in the office that wants to see me and we could use his office. And we had a good relationship, and I said, oh, Bob, I've got to stop drinking. And he said, yeah, me too. I said, well, I'll. But he was a triathlete. He just wanted to stop drinking so he could get ready for the next triathlon. You know, on Friday when we went out and we played golf, and it was like after school, like, and everybody bellied up to the bar, and he said, what do you want, Robin? And I said, no, I'm not drinking anymore. He said, well, we can drink. No. And so anyway, the sheriff served me a restraining order. So yeah, my life was unmanageable. And it's a good thing now because I understand one of my character defects is I'm a stalker. And I've done it before. Yeah. I would not have left that man alone. I know. And I, you know, if I look back at my history, yeah, he wasn't the only one I stalked. And then I married this wonderful man. I met this man. And the good thing was is that we met doing service for the San Diego Spring Roundup, and so we only got to see each other once a month, so I didn't follow him out of the... But when I found out he went to Old Town Speakers, all of a sudden that became a meeting I went to. No. So I started my sobriety out with a restraining order for a year. I couldn't go near the house. I couldn't go near the dog. I guess I belonged here. But step two came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, here's this power right here in front of me. All of you are that power. You are greater than me, and the collective we is what keeps me sober, and I have to keep coming back to get in touch with this power that keeps me sober, that keeps me sane, that keeps me honest. And once I got this taste of all of what was going on in these rooms, I was ready to turn my will and my life over to this power. and that was turning my life. Like, I saw it working for you, and I'm like, okay, I'll do whatever you guys are doing because I want what you have. And I loved my sponsor. I loved the way that she had this laugh about life, and she was serious, but she was sober, and I wanted what she had, and I wanted, like I said, what you had. And so I was willing to turn my life, my will, my life over. And today I continue to do that. But now I also admit I can't do it without you, God. I don't know how to do it. There's certain things I want to do, but you know what? I can't do it by myself. So having been ready and getting a taste of all this like good stuff here, I was ready to do that that moral inventory they talk about in the fourth step. And that's when my secrets came out, and that's when I really got to see what those resentments were, and I got to go on and on about all the resentments I had against Tony, and also the resentments I had against, like, all the things I'd wanted to do in my life, and, you know, here I was now a teacher. I wanted to be a famous artist and this and that, and I was an elementary teacher. I never wanted to be an elementary teacher. To me, that was just, like, beneath me. And I've been doing it for 20 years at that point. And I've been drinking those 20 years, and they kept asking me to come back year after year. You know, even after that, you know, and I'm still there. And that resentment about not being the famous artist, that I carried that with me for the first few years in sobriety, because I kept hearing about other people realizing their dreams when they got sober, and I thought, oh, well, you know, that's what's going to happen to me. And it didn't. And now I understand. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And only in the last couple years have I started to embrace what I do and love what I do. It only took me 34 years of teaching. And I go back now, and I hope they keep me until I'm 70, you know, because the more sober I get, the better my life gets, the better my outlook is, the more it's like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I can be of service right here, right now, with where I'm at. It doesn't matter. Step five, when I admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, and I told everything to my sponsor, and I told her my deepest, darkest secrets. And she said to me, "You haven't told me anything I haven't heard before." And I just about died. Like, and I say the same things to my sponsees. And yeah, and it's been such a joy to be trusted, to hear that. But it's the same thing. Everything you tell me, I've already heard it. Yeah, it's like, or I've done it, you know? You know? And what I haven't done, you get to share with somebody else, because you get to be that person for somebody else. So that those two steps about 6 and 7 about character defects, I didn't know what those were when I first did those steps in that first year of sobriety. Character defects, I didn't have a good sense of them. And I swear I read through those. I know I did the work with my sponsor, but it's only really as the years have gone on, I've gotten to know my character defects and how they interfere with my ability to love and serve. And Mara and I were talking today about, like, my character defects get in the way of me being the person my Creator made me to be. And I think you said, my character defects, what did you say? I can't blank it out. They make me the person I created. Yeah, something like that. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. So, like, right now, one of my defects, I understand, it, well, being a perfectionist, which is good if you're a teacher. You know, you want things to work out. But what I forgot is that it's, we say spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. Our Creator did not make us to be perfect. And that striving, those mistakes, every time now I know I'm going to make a mistake, or when I'm really hurting because I've hurt somebody, now I embrace it and I say, because now I know I'm going to, if I work with this defect and I humbly ask God to remove this defect, I'm going to get closer to my spiritual Creator. I'm going to get closer to God. And I also want to say, though, I have to backtrack here for the God thing. There have been, my idea about God has changed so much over the 13 years I've been sober. And my ideas of God were most, grew the most when I was working with a woman who had relapsed. She'd been very strong in the program before. She'd had sponsees. She'd had like a bunch of years of sobriety, and she relapsed. And she was now had no faith whatsoever. And I don't know what happened to her. She moved away. I think she's okay, but I don't know. But her loss of that crisis of faith that she had helped me, challenged me on what I believe. And so the people who have helped me grow the most spiritually in that aspect, defining what this God thing is, are the people who don't necessarily believe that there is a God, the atheists, the agnostics. And so I appreciate like that we have so much diversity here in the way that we believe in some power greater than ourselves. Yeah. So my defects of character now, like I know perfectionism, and I also know that like I'm a thief and I'll take whatever you want, whatever you have that I think I need. Or, and I did that from like, I remember being like a little kid and like, you know, stealing candy from the grocery aisle when you're in the store with your mom and you're waiting for the checkout and there's all that candy and there's a lot of kid level. So, you know, I was like four or five. And then, you know, it just progressed. And when I was in high school, it was like whatever I wanted, you know, in the store. This is kind of really silly too, but I grew up in a small Midwestern town, a very small town with one grocery store, and that's where I stole those packs of cigarettes. And it was in sixth grade, and my mom found out, and she made me write the letter to the store with the two quarters, and they posted it on the bulletin board so everyone could see. But that did not steal my shoplifting career, and it didn't stop my smoking or anything like that, you know, because that's what happens. I didn't stop until I was desperate. You know, I know my mom tried, you know, therapy. Oh, yeah, Mom, I'll go to therapy. I'm really depressed. You know, like, stop the car. I have to throw up right now. but it was like, I kind of, at least that lie in my head, I'll do whatever you want just to make you stop talking and to make, and I'll do, you know, but I'm gonna just going to wait. I'm still going to drink. Yeah. So making that list of all persons we'd harm and became willing to make amends to them all. When I first came in the rooms and I saw those, that step about 8 and 9, and I thought, there's no way I'm ever going to make an amends to Tony for all the things he'd done. You know, this is 20 years of a marriage where, you know, oh, I did this and I did that and he still did this and he still did that. And my father had been the main source of my misery and he'd been dead. He died in 1990. But when I made that amends to Tony, and we had the he was very gracious. He like bowed down to me and said, "I accept your apology. Let's just be the best co-parents we can for our kid." And you know, since then, Glenn and I got married, and we go and celebrate Christmas with Tony. And Tony has had us over to his house, and Tony is a gourmet chef as well. And so we'll have this beautiful Christmas Eggs Benedict, and, you know, these beautiful celebrations. But that's what happens with, you know, making that amends. My dad was a whole nother thing. The first thing I realized was that he was doing the best he could with what he had. And that helped a little. I actually had to do the steps again. And the second time I did the steps with my dad, I mean, on that whole thing, is I become grateful because I realized that I inherited this spiritual sickness from him. And he didn't get the chance to work the steps. He didn't get the chance to get what I had. And so I feel like I get to heal the both of us. So it's like not just me on this journey, it's my dad, it's my grandfather. And it's all of us. And I have a picture of my grandfather in my big book, because he was the alcoholic that wreaked havoc in my life as well. So, step four, when I admitted step five to my sponsor, I felt a freedom. No, I felt a sense of belonging, but I have felt the real freedom after making those amends. And knowing that now, yeah, when I'm wrong now, I want to admit it. I don't do it right away sometimes. You can ask my husband. It takes some time sometimes for me to wake up and admit that I'm wrong. I like to hold on to that like I'm right. But I understand now the freedom that comes with that. And so I continue, that's part of like continuing to take that personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And so a couple weeks ago, I did something where I forgot to invite my stepdaughter to my birthday celebration. Yeah, so I have some work to do on that. But that's part of my inventory thing. And then, so the prayer and meditation thing has also changed a lot. What I do now, I didn't do then. I used to be, there's an app that you can meditate with, and what's so cool is it keeps track of how many days you've meditated, and it keeps track of all these streaks that you have, and it compares you to other people, and I'm like, and it became, yeah, so that became obsessive, and I don't use that app anymore. But I was meditating for a while, and then I dropped off, and then a couple of years ago, I got really sick where I was having these spells of vertigo, but it wasn't your classic vertigo, and I was passing out, and I was dehydrated, and I was going to the hospital, and Glenn was carrying me around, and I couldn't go to work for a couple months, and I don't know what it was, but I started meditating, and when I went back to work, and I was scared that it would happen again, and that's when I started meditating on a regular basis. And I've just kept it up since then. And, you know, it's not a race. It's not a contest. It's just time for me to shut up, be still, and be still and know that I am God. And my little brain goes, but. And I hear that, be still and know that I am God. And, you know, it's not perfect. I don't do it every night. And sometimes but it works. It's been working for me, and it's where I'm at right now. And in the morning, my prayers go like this. I say the third step prayer. I talk to God. I said, okay, I'm ready to do this. But I don't do it perfectly, and I screw up. And so I say the seventh step prayer. Then I say a 10th step prayer for the day. God, guide me through this day. I say my own version of the 11th step prayer, where I'm like, about putting others first, letting go of my resentments. And then I go through my gratitudes for everything my Creator has given me, my life and my sobriety. Because this is a grace, this is a gift, this sobriety thing. Again, like, not everybody gets it. And that's where I'm like, I reach out to the newcomers like, hey, you know what? I hope you get it. Because it's given me this life that I never knew could be so wonderful and beautiful and peaceful. And what I get with this sobriety is I get to, like, look at these people that I love, and I see so many people and, like, that I know, and people that show up for me, and it's just been an absolute joy to show up for you. And this is a gift. So I'm grateful. That's my gratitude. You know, I give my gratitudes too for, like, all the other things I've given. And then I go through a list of all the people I'm grateful for in my life. You know, my sobriety family, my sponsees, my sponsors, you know, it's just like, yeah. And then carrying this message, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these 12 steps. Yeah, I mean, I'm carrying the message right now. I love talking to people about sobriety. I love meeting with sponsees and reading through the book and working through the steps. And they'll tell you how many aha moments I get when I'm working with you. It's like, oh, I learned so much about what's going on in my sobriety life, working with others. So I think, you know, I just want to look back. I thought I had so much under control in my life, but I was miserable because I couldn't get the things that I thought I wanted. I thought the things that I thought I should have. And I did a lot of dumb things, to get those things. But this program has taught me about patience and taught me about, like, really the thing is thinking about others, but also to remember that I am important as well, and that I can't be of much service if I'm beating myself up. And so to cherish who I am as well, so that I can be that person my Creator made me to be. And I do want to mention that part of my program too is meeting Glenn has been the result of getting honest. And when I met Glenn, it was like, he's like nobody I'd ever met before. You know, he's like full on about, like, he doesn't play games. He's really honest and I think sometimes what he sees with, I have this vision of like, Glenn's like sitting there, I'll be spinning around in my alcoholic circles. Like, and Glenn's just like sitting there in the chair with the keys, ready to go whenever I am. I mean, and, you know, that's a joy. That's an absolute joy. He's, so meeting somebody that gets me and is very patient with me, and I think that's one of the promises come true right there. That is one of the biggest promises. Becoming happy with my job, and I actually did something this week that I'm really proud of myself. They had this grant available for teachers to do any kind of personal enrichment we want to for the summer, and you get $7,500. And I always thought about, oh, that'd be great, but I never really knew what I wanted to do. But now, knowing what I wanted to do, I actually submitted that grant last week. And whether I win it or not, it's not the big deal. The issue. The issue for me is I went for it, I researched it, I showed other people, what do you think? And, that was something like believing, like, understand it, this place for American is a really good place, and teaching science. And what I want to do is like go find the migratory birds that are here in South Bay. Like, where are they going in the summer? You know, it's like, why? You know, we got sunshine here. So that's what I want to do, is find out where they're going. They're going up north. I know. That's where I'm finding in sobriety, is I'm finding out that person my creator made has got good qualities. And the last thing I want to tell you really is the joy of watching others get sober, the joy of watching people I see come to meetings from when they're newcomers, and then they get a year, and then they get 2 years. It's beautiful. I kind of, and watching the sponsees, like they're just watching the miracles happen before my eyes. It's the best. It's the best gift. And so I am not going to go on any longer about like how wonderful it is. If you're a newcomer, just stay and find your own kind of like miracle to keep you in here. So thank you all.
Thank you, Robin. Okay. Got to thank tonight's secretary, too, Patty. Thank you. It happened at the bingo game last night. He was thanking everybody for doing anything, you know? Everything. So, okay. So I'd like to thank Robin for sharing tonight, and hopefully you'll come back soon. And,
hey, Robin. Yeah.
I wasn't here, but there was a dinner here tonight, and it was made by the residents of the house. So let's thank them. The Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. They supported us by serving us. And now, if Robin will choose the prayer of her choice and circle us up and close us out in the usual manner. Okay.